This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehius Wuhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
This new product would allow women to be more empowered and to be able to have an opportunity and a choice to practice safe sexual practices, and it would be their choice, not like some of the preventative methods where the choice is actually in the hand of the partner.
That was Diski Kalonji, a public health specialist at the South Africa Medical Research Council, on a reported breakthrough in preventing HIV infections. Details coming up also. Up to 200,000 refugees could pour into Sudan while fleeing the deadly conflict in Ethiopia's Tigray region. And the UN warns global hunger is reaching new heights as COVID-19 devastates economies around the world. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. The University of Witwatersrand in Johannesburg says it has made a breakthrough in preventing HIV infection with an injection every 8 weeks that clinical trials show is safe and more effective than the current medication. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
The breakthrough was announced by Sinead Dilane Moredle, Director of Research at Vitz Reproductive and HIV Institute, who was heading the clinical trial known as HPTN-084.
The interpretation of this finding is that cabotegravir is 89% more effective than Truvada in preventing HIV infection in women, and the threshold for early stopping of the trial was met.
The trial conducted by the HIV Prevention Trials Network compared the effectiveness of cabotegravir to daily oral tenofovir, emtricitabine, which is currently used for HIV prevention amongst women in sub-Saharan Africa. It was necessitated by the realization that a daily tenofovir pill was hard on women with certain medical conditions and some would simply forget to take it. 3,223 women from 6 countries of Southern Africa were enrolled in the study. Participants were assigned to either a regimen consisting of cabotegravir or oral tenofovir emtricitabine. The study revealed that an injection every 8 weeks containing cabotegravir was more effective than daily oral tenofovir. Professor Helen Rees, Executive Director at the Vitz Reproductive and HIV Institute, says it will be some time before the drug is ready for distribution.
There are additional scientific and clinical questions that we still have to answer. So we're not looking at something that's going to be available immediately. But clearly, this is going to be fast-tracked, both from the clinical research point of view and the manufacturing side.
Other independent research organizations have applauded the study, saying it clearly shows that African scientists are a formidable force in the medical field. Diski Kalonji is a public health specialist and principal investigator at the South African Medical Research Council.
This new product would allow women to be more empowered and to be able to have an opportunity and a choice to practice safe sexual practices, and it would be their choice, not like some of the preventative methods where the choice is actually in the hand of the partner.
HIV and AIDS treatment and prevention activists have also welcomed the breakthrough. Stanley Lovu, who has been living with HIV for years, leads the Asakaneni Health and Wellness Group of people living with HIV and HIV-negative people who support them.
We are very happy about this development. I just hope our communities will welcome it and use it, because it's now easy compared to the treatment of every day. No one is going to forget to take the treatment, so an HIV-free generation is possible.
Lovo is urging pharmaceutical companies not to price the final product beyond the reach of poor and unemployed women. Thuso Khumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
In South Africa, the second most powerful member of the ruling African National Congress is expected to appear in court on Friday on charges of corruption and fraud. ANC Secretary General S. Magatsuli has long been implicated in financial crimes, which he has repeatedly denied. He allegedly looted the coffers of the Free State Province in collaboration with former President Jacob Zuma when Magasuli was premier there from 2009 to 2018. Darren Taylor has the story.
Among his many alleged crimes, investigators say Magasuli helped organize a deal during which 235 million rand, more than $15 million, was stolen. He allegedly paid the money to a firm to remove asbestos, which causes lung disease, from houses in the Free State. Only a fraction of the work was completed, says the woman who first exposed the scandal, opposition party MP Leona Kleinans.
There were 36,000 asbestos roofs in the Free State were identified by one of the subcontractors. And a recent question to the legislature in which I asked how many of those roofs have now finally been replaced. And the number is only 3,500.
Magashule spoke to supporters in Soweto shortly after hearing a warrant had been issued for his arrest. He says he's being victimized.
Our looks are continuing, the struggle is continuing, because the enemy has infiltrated the African National Congress. At the right time, we'll talk about some of these things.
Magashule leads the crowd in a song from his days as a fighter in the ANC's military wing, Umkhonto we Sizwe, or MK. He insists he knows nothing about the asbestos tender. That doesn't make any sense, says Kleinans, because she originally laid charges against then-Premier Magashule in relation to the contract more than 5 years ago.
The legal advisor sits in the Premier's office. The legal advisor was the one who had to launch a legal defense in our court action. So it's almost impossible that the Premier sat in the office with a legal advisor and didn't know anything about our allegations that this case was illegal.
The head of the MK Veterans Association, Carl Niehaus, says many ANC members are dismayed and angered by the charges against Magashule.
We have many times warned that the state security agencies and allegations of corruption must not be used in a selective manner and must not be used for factional political purposes. Our impression is that this is exactly what is happening with regards to this particular warrant of arrest. We believe that it will have serious consequences for the African National Congress and also for our country in general.
Niehaus says the charges against the ANC's highest office bearer, bar the president himself, are a conspiracy by his foes within the ANC. This rings hollow, responds political analyst Prince Mashele.
The master of this script is someone who is facing his own legal troubles. His name is Jacob Zuma. So what S. Magashule is doing is borrowing from the master. Let him go tell the court whether or not he has committed crime. He must not use politics to hide behind.
But Niehaus insists Magashule has been persecuted, partly because of his friendship with Zuma, who also faces multiple charges of corruption. Niehaus won't mention who Magashule's enemies are, but it's an open secret that he doesn't get on with President Cyril Ramaphosa.
We all know what the environment is in which this has taken place, the kind of propaganda against the Secretary General of the ANC, the vilification of the Secretary General of the ANC, and we cannot do anything else but to read this as a political action in order to settle scores with a political opponent. And this is very dangerous.
An official from the Hawks Anti-Corruption Investigative Agency told VOA the case against Magashule isn't based on politics, but on solid documentary evidence that will be backed in court by credible witnesses. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
Officials say up to 200,000 refugees could pour into Sudan while fleeing the deadly conflict in Ethiopia's northern Tigray region. Ethiopia's leader is rejecting negotiations with a regional government he regards as illegal. Ethiopia's Human Rights Commission also condemned the arrest of journalists as Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed pressed ahead with a military offensive in a northern region against local leaders defiant of his authority. Hundreds have died in airstrikes and fighting since the conflict erupted a week ago. Fears are growing that Ethiopia could slide into civil war. Botswana soldiers fatally shot four suspected poachers along the border with Namibia as part of an effort to battle an unprecedented rash of poaching. But Namibia police claim the deceased were fishermen, not poachers. From Habrone, Botswana, reporter Mokandisi Dube has the details.
The Botswana army killed the four men in the wildlife-rich Chobe region in the country's west. Three were Namibians, the other was Zambian. Authorities in Namibia and Zambia said Botswana had killed innocent fishermen, with the shooting sparking outrage on social media. But in a statement released Monday, the Botswana army said the four were poachers gunned down in a former disputed strip, the Sidudu Island. Botswana says poaching has reached an alarming rate, particularly along the border with Namibia, Zambia and Zimbabwe. Rhinoceros are increasingly being targeted, with more than 50 killed in the last 2 years. Conservationist Neil Fitt said poachers see Botswana as an easier target.
One of the major reasons for us to have such a high pressure at this time is because everyone else, South Africa mainly, is doing a better and better and better job at protecting their wildlife. So therefore, they're looking for the easier targets. We are seen as a relatively easy target because of our vast open spaces and lack of population.
Rhino conservationist Map Ives said there is need for an all-stakeholder approach to fighting poaching.
We are not including enough people in the effort to fight poaching. We don't have enough intelligence. The DWNP is not involved directly, and so on. I think that we are admitting defeat in the war against poaching.
Botswana introduced a shoot-to-kill policy in 2018, with President Mokgweetsi Masisi warning the army will not hesitate to defend the country's natural resources. The army has killed 21 suspected poachers since the start of the year. Habron authorities recently took a decision to translocate and dehorn rhinos, particularly the black rhino, which faces extinction. Despite the tougher measures, poachers appear undeterred. For VOA, this is Mqondisi Dube in Haburoni, Botswana.
Zimbabwe's civil servant incomes have been dramatically eroded by inflation over the years, and they have been demanding pay raises. To push the government, most nurses have not reported for duty for over 4 months, and teachers have been out for over a month. Talks have been dragging on for months. Reporter Kuzai Zadawashi has the details from Harare.
Teachers and nurses do not call their labor action a strike. Instead, they call it an incapacitation. They argue their incomes are too small to support themselves or even afford transportation to work. Obed Masaraure is the president of the Amalgamated Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe.
Teachers cannot afford to send their own children to school. Teachers cannot afford to pay accommodation. They cannot afford food, among other basics. This is unacceptable, and we are saying this incapacitation can only be ended when the value of our 2018 salaries is restored.
Wednesday, the government announced it had reviewed its salary offer to civil servants. Monica Mutsangwa is the Minister of Information.
Noting its obligations to pay a decent wage, government has reviewed upwards the salary increase offer to civil servants to 41%, which will be awarded to deputy director grades and below. In addition to the salary increase, the teachers will also be awarded a 10% risk allowance. The new basic salary package for the teacher is now at 18,237 Zimbabwe dollars, which is above the poverty datum line.
Masaraure says the offer, which equals about $56 a month, is far from their demands.
The 40% salary increment offered by government falls short of our expectations. Government is still to restore the value of our salaries, which we illegally slashed in 2018. We still demand US$520 from our employer. That amount is commensurate with the lived realities in Zimbabwe, the cost of living in Zimbabwe.
The government says the offer came into effect on the 1st of November. Officials hope it may convince teachers to return to work and catch up with the education calendar that is currently behind due to COVID-19 lockdowns. While the labor dispute continues, parents are paying fees for schools that are officially open but without teachers to carry out instruction. Some school heads have been sending students back home given the absence of teachers. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashi from Harare.
The United Nations warns global hunger is reaching new heights as COVID-19 devastates economies around the world. A report by the World Food Programme and International Organization for Migration says severe food shortages are forcing millions of people to migrate in search of work to feed their families. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Communities most at risk are those riven by conflict, violence, and natural disasters. The report says efforts to curb COVID-19 have led to unprecedented restrictions on mobility, trade, and economic activity, triggering a global recession and causing hunger to surge. The World Food Program projects a staggering 80% increase in the number of acutely food insecure people from pre-COVID-19 levels of 149 million to 270 million by the end of the year. The joint WFP-IOM report finds the world's 164 million migrant workers, especially those in the informal sector, are among those worst hit by the pandemic. IOM spokeswoman Angela Wells says migrant workers, who often work on a temporary seasonal basis for little money and no social protection, are particularly vulnerable.
More than 94,000 travel restrictions in over 220 countries, territories, or areas put in place to contain the spread of the disease have limited opportunities for people to move, work, and afford food and other basic needs. Without sustained income, the report warns that many will be pushed to return home, which will cause a significant drop in remittances.
The report estimates remittances provide an essential lifeline for around 800 million or 1 in 9 people in the world. The World Bank expects remittances to drop by as much as 14% worldwide in 2020. WFP spokesman Thompson Theory says remittances from international migrants play a crucial role in supporting families. He says hunger inevitably will increase without that source of income.
Based on our analysis, WFP has projected that the remittance losses alone could leave an additional 33 million people at risk of hunger across the 79 countries covered by this analysis. And our offices are reporting that 1 in 5 households said that they used remittances entirely to buy food.
The two agencies are calling on the international community to respond to the immediate and rising humanitarian needs of the hundreds of millions of people struggling to survive the devastating socioeconomic impacts of the pandemic. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Organizers of next year's rescheduled Tokyo Olympics will have measures in place to limit the spread of the coronavirus. But little is known about how the virus affects the long-term health of those who were already infected, including athletes. South African researchers are leading an international effort to try to find answers. Details from Maries de Klerk in Pretoria.
South African Olympic hurdler Venda Nel is grateful to be back on track for next year's rescheduled Tokyo Olympics after recovering from COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus.
It was about 2 to 4 weeks that I've took it very slowly with the training, checked my heart rate every training session, just monitor that. And from there, I actually went into full program and I feel stronger, fit, and actually fully recovered right now.
The International Olympic Committee tasked a prominent South African sports physician, Martin Schwellnus, to lead international scientists in compiling guidelines for doctors treating athletes recovering from acute respiratory infections, including the coronavirus. The University of Pretoria's Sport, Exercise Medicine and Lifestyle Institute, SEMLI, through the IOC Research Centre in South Africa, initiated the International AWARE Research Study as part of this work. The project includes data from the COVID-19 Recovery Clinic for athletes. Dr. Schwellnus, who is a professor at the University of Pretoria and the director of SEMLI, says COVID-19 seems to affect various organ systems.
In the returning to sport, it could result in medical complications. And to date, we don't really know what these are for COVID. And so the focus of the project is to investigate what happens in the athlete when they've had COVID and how does the body heal and respond.
The project uses an online survey to gather data from any person training regularly for 3 hours a week who had acute respiratory infections, including COVID-19. Those recovering from the ailment can join the COVID-19 recovery clinic for help returning to sports. Medical doctor and amateur triathlete Michelle Huister joined the clinic after he recovered from COVID-19, which he caught from a patient.
I'm expected to follow a specific return to play protocol in terms of what I'm allowed to do in terms of exercise. That is, if I have passed all the testing, and then I am required to give them feedback in terms of how I feel following training.
17, 18, 19, 20. The research examines COVID-19's impact on all organ systems. According to preliminary findings, athletes who've had COVID-19 find low-intensity exercise to be harder and recovery time much longer than from other respiratory infections. Evidence-based guidelines should help recovering athletes to better and more safely prepare for the Tokyo Olympics, says Kelly Muller, rehabilitation specialist at the University of Pretoria's SEMLI.
If an athlete does happen to contract COVID-19, it would be really important and really valuable for the coaches and medical professionals to have evidence-based advice to guide that athlete back to their performance in the shortest time possible.
For Vinda Nell and other Olympic athletes recovering from the infection, the research could help them come home from Tokyo as champions. Marise de Klerk for VOA News, Pretoria, South Africa.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyis Wahib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbiya Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing The Voice of America.
Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports.